From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in El Sabrante.
I live in Emeryville.
I live in Antioch, California.
Potter's Creek.
Pleasant Hill.
I live in Albany, but Albany doesn't have neighborhoods.
Coming up, teaching teenagers a new way to think about sexual consent.
Like, they know the phrase no means no, but when it comes into that situation, they're like, oh, well.
Then coaching parents through talking to their kids about sex.
I think that what parents don't realize is where kids are getting their information, that their kids are turning to porn.
And a composer reveals his process.
Sounds, for me, it all should relate back to the ideas of the lyrics.
Composition and consent, today on Cross Currents. For several years now, we've been talking about hookup culture and rape culture and how best to empower young people to enjoy sexuality safely. In 2013, a national study revealed that almost a quarter of all college women were victims of sexual violence during their time in school, but less than 10% of them report the assaults. A year later, California made national news by passing a law requiring colleges and universities to adopt policies on sexual assault, including a new definition of sexual consent. But what if we began this conversation even earlier? KALW's Geraldine Asu brings us the story.
When I think of consent, it's like asking someone, would you like to do it or not?
That's Jordan Diaz Boutte, a sophomore at Philip and Sala Burton High School in San Francisco. And from her perspective, consent is still an ambiguous issue.
Right now, I think that people don't really think of consent as anything. Like, they know the phrase no means no, but when it comes into that situation, they're like, oh, well.
In 2014, California became the first state in the nation to write affirmative consent into law, defining it as, quote, affirmative, conscious, and voluntary engagement in sexual activity. Under the old no means no approach, consent is the default unless you specifically hear the word no. The updated yes means yes says unless you hear yes, you better stop right there. The new affirmative consent standard was first implemented at the college level. But this year, a new state law takes it even further, mandating that yes means yes be taught in high schools. So what does this actually look like? I decided to ask somebody who knows.
Hi, my name's Hannah.
Hannah Pastrano works for Expect Respect, a peer education group from City College that teaches about consent in San Francisco School District. While Pastrano's been a sex educator for 3 years, this semester she's changing things up to comply with the new law. Because of timing issues, I couldn't get into a classroom, so I asked Hannah to simulate a workshop for me instead.
Okay, so we're all different, right? So we're all gonna do this a little different, but I want you guys to feel your yes and feel your no, right? So feel what your own voice sounds like when you're saying this, right? Because we wanna get this practice in.
She proceeds to ask me to strike a pose that feels like my yes, so a thumbs up or something like that. I feel self-conscious at first, but wanting to get the full experience, I open my arms to the air and say yes.
Consent is fun for both partners.
Yes.
Consent means both people are equally into it.
Yes.
Consent is enthusiastic.
Yes.
Consent is sexy.
Yes.
Okay, now you guys can sit down.
I've never been asked to pay attention to what saying yes actually feels like. And I gotta say, I'm feeling it. And it feels good. We move on to practicing saying no.
Okay, so now we're gonna ask you guys to say no and feel free to do your power pose to all of these rape myths, okay? So, do you owe a person sex if they've paid for the date?
No.
Good. Do you owe a person sex if you've been flirting with them?
No.
What about if you're dressed in a really sexy way?
No.
I was surprised, but doing this exercise, hearing myself say yes and no, actually made me feel more confident. And according to Pastrano, that's exactly the point. Consent is about feeling empowered to communicate. But while these exercises are a good start, she says real-life situations might not always mirror what we learn in the classroom.
I feel like if you haven't been there necessarily yet, then, you know, it might sound like, well, if I say no, they're going to back off. But I think in that situation, it's not so easy to just state your boundary and be done with it.
I think we have a lot of fear just about talking about sexual activity.
That's health educator Christopher Pepper.
So some of it's just getting comfortable with the words.
Pepper was a primary editor of SFUSD's sex ed curriculum called Be Real, Be Ready. He says starting these conversations about consent early, in ninth grade in San Francisco schools, is super important so that when the time comes, young people will be ready.
Better relationships and better sexual experiences come out of people more fully expressing their desires and their wants and being comfortable saying what they don't want and what they aren't comfortable with.
In order to get comfortable with that, we have to practice. And that means making conversations about consent much more commonplace. Pepper says there's a metaphor he likes to use. He got it from a sex educator named Al Vernacchio.
And the idea is that when we think about consent, it can seem a little complicated, so it might be better to think about ordering pizza.
Did you say pizza? Please continue.
When one person's hungry and they're around a friend or a group of friends, they can say, I'd like some pizza. And then their friend can say, great, I'd love some pizza too. And if two people decide to have pizza together, that's not the end of the conversation.
Keep talking. What do you like on your pizza?
Oh, do they like the same kind of toppings? Can they agree? Maybe one person feels like mushrooms that day. Doesn't mean they always feel like mushrooms, but that day they want to have mushrooms and the other person wants pepperoni. Well, they work that out. Can they both agree on that or not?
Of course, consent is about much more than pizza. But the point is that the more consent becomes a comfortable topic of conversation, the better our chances for creating a more safe and respectful environment. And that's a pizza that everyone can agree on. For Cross Currents, I'm Geraldine Asu.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Legislation in schools is one way to support healthy attitudes and practices among young people. But sex ed doesn't begin and end in the classroom. Kids learn about sexuality and relationships all over the place, from their peers, from media, like pornography, and possibly even from their parents at home. Those talks can be tricky, and San Francisco educator Anya Maness says she's here to help. She used to teach high school biology and sex ed as one component, but she noticed kids seemed to need much more information than she could cover in the classroom. Things like healthy relationships and dealing with the sexual imagery all around us. She now leads workshops and coaches parents to help fill those gaps. Anya Maness spoke with KLW's Jen Chien. And a quick note to our listeners, while there's nothing graphic in this interview, it does contain some sexual language and terminology about sex.
How did you move into talking to parents, deciding to work with parents?
The sex ed teacher or presenter who is there for a day or a week or a month or a school year, that's great. But that is not as powerful as having a lifelong ally. And so it seemed to me that the parent is really the one who ideally would be doing this work and having these conversations with their kids. Because, hey, if you can talk to your kids about sex, you could talk to them about anything.
So you used to teach sex education as a biology teacher. What did you find when you were teaching that was missing when you were doing that in school?
Well, this was usually with 10th graders, and they would come in with all kinds of questions. So we'd be talking about the basics, right, of conception and how the fetus develops and all those things, but they really wanted to know more about how they should navigate their relationships and when was the right age to start having sex and the details of oral sex and anal sex. And, you know, it got interesting pretty quickly.
And so they felt comfortable enough to ask those things in class with you?
Some of them did. It would be very giggly.
Mm-hmm, I'm sure.
And then I started to bring in a classic sex education trick, which is to have the anonymous question box.
Oh, that's a good one.
So I got all kinds of fun, interesting questions in the question box. Things like, if I have sex with a dog, will my baby be a werewolf? Or what does cum taste like? or, you know, all sort of what's better, vaginal sex or anal sex. And so it started to get outside the realm of biology and into the realm of kind of relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, how do I know that I'm ready to have sex and things like that?
So you really emphasize teaching young people, especially teenagers, about healthy relationships in addition to the biological and physical facts of sex. A lot of times parents don't go in that deep with their kids about that stuff other than just don't have sex. So tell me about some of the things that you try to encourage parents to talk about.
I think the biggest one that parents come to me wanting help with is boundaries and consent, because that isn't really taught in any formal way. In terms of feeling boundaries, it's much easier to feel your physical boundaries than your emotional boundaries. So, like, you could ask your young child to try holding their breath. And at some point, they will feel the moment when they get uncomfortable and it's becoming difficult to hold their breath, right? And so they will have crossed out of their comfort zone. So you can help your child really get a sense of their physical boundaries in everyday ways, right? Is the music too loud? Is it too soft? Is the light too bright? Then you can start to bring in the emotional boundaries, which is, are you scared? Are you worried? Are you mad? Are you anxious, right? So we can start to talk about how emotionally your boundaries are getting crossed and what you can do about it.
What's different about today's environment in terms of how kids learn about sex and in sexuality than in previous generations?
I think that what parents don't realize is where kids are getting their information. I think parents don't realize that their kids are turning to porn.
Or how much information or misinformation they might be getting.
Yes.
And what should parents say?
I would probably use analogies as much as possible. If you think about, like, the Fast and the Furious, if you think about a movie that has a car chase in it, kids have been in cars. Kids have seen you drive. They know what real driving is like and that car chase is totally fake, that it is thrilling, and that that's all sort of sensationalized, right? That car chase is only for entertainment purposes. Pornography is rather similar. It is fast and furious. There are boundaries being crossed. So just giving the kid a sense that, oh, this is for entertainment purposes. It is crafted. It's like the car chase. It is not real. Real sexual relationships have moments that are funny. There's communication. It's much slower. It's much more intentional, right? There's maybe not so many people involved, right? So just a sense of what is real adult sex like as opposed to what they're seeing online.
The sexualization of ads and popular culture and imagery, it's kind of everywhere. It's like the water that we swim in. So how do you talk to parents about talking to their kids about that?
I think what I would do is have the parent follow a little script at first. So what does this ad want you to believe? It doesn't have to be an ad with sex in it. So it could be that pomegranate juice will make you live forever. So that's the first step. And then the second one would be, is it true? Maybe pomegranate juice will make you healthier, but it probably won't make you live forever. Right?
Or will eating this hamburger give you big boobs?
Right.
Or something.
So the is it true piece is important to point out, hey, these ideas aren't actually linked often. And then what's real, right? So what is true? So what's really true is that what's attractive about me is my sense of humor or how I have integrity and how I walk through the world. Not so much my bra size. So if parents walk through that little routine with their kids often, then, you know, that little script of what does this ad want you to think? Is it true? What's really true? Can ultimately really have an impact on their child because their child starts to see how they're being manipulated by these ads.
And those are the kinds of things that aren't usually addressed in school curriculum around sex ed, but it's something that is very tied, very related.
Right. So lots of different pieces that pull in the relationships and the navigating of the relationships, not just the birds and the bees, not just penises and vaginas.
That's Anya Manez talking to KLW's Jen Chien. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Berkeley-based guitarist and songwriter John Givens brings a sensibility for visual art into his songwriting. He used to be a filmmaker and art director. Together with his band No Lovely Thing, he also explores social issues and emotional themes. He shared the stories behind some of their songs in this edition of Bay Area Beats.
I've always been a guitar player since the age of about 13. Took lessons for a few weeks and decided that was not for me. So I'm pretty much self-taught, although that seems like such a funny thing to say because, I mean, it's really about learning from other people. You learn something every time you play with anybody, I feel like, especially a new person. You're always like, wow, that's how you do it. That's how you come at it. That's how you think about this. I was 13 and played pretty avidly all the way up through high school, through college, moved to Atlanta with some of those same people to become a rock star. Played in a band there called Lull Water for about 2 years. Then almost stopped playing entirely. I was living in Atlanta and was really my taste had outgrown my abilities almost. I was not excited about what I was doing. And so I was just really tired of that. I was living in Atlanta. It was the land of classic rock. All you heard was the same 15 songs over and over again, which is still the case. And I was just tired of it. So I put down playing music for about 10 years. I played for about 10 years, took about 10 years off. And then slowly started getting back into it when my son was born about 8 years ago. You just have this little infant and you're trying to get it to go back to sleep so often. And I'm sitting there singing Eric Clapton Cocaine at 4 a.m. I don't lie, you don't lie, go to sleep. It's like, I need some material here. I need something. And you're doing that over and over again so many times a day. Little ideas just started sticking with me and started developing them. And then I just picked up the guitar and started working on them. This is a recording of a song I wrote called Your Majesty.
Your Majesty, Your Majesty, conviction is your crime.
This is an old song that I've wrote about 5 years ago that we're kind of reinterpreting now through the lens of the band in its current state. We reworked a lot of the arrangements to incorporate our new elements, especially the singing. Choruses became much bolder and stronger with the layers of harmony. It's just a really fun song to break down and play live. I think I'm more drawn to the live aspects. I really enjoy performing and enjoy interpreting the song in that moment. I think a lot of groups or performers record a song and that is the pinnacle of the way that song is supposed to be played. And when you get into a live setting, you play the song and your goal is to match it back to that pinnacle. We try to be more open with that and try to let moods come in, let things influence us. We like to have some sort of playgrounds, we call them, within every song where we know it's a linear progression. A will lead to B will lead to C, but the length of B might be 2 minutes, it might be 30 seconds, might be, you know, longer or shorter. And just letting the song be what it is each time we perform it. A song that I wrote originally as a very kind of brooding and sad song, which you can hear kind of in the introduction. And Melissa and I, this is one of the first songs that we really wrote together. She had some words that she had written already, and we just kind of sat down and both modified our ideas maybe 25% and met in the middle. But my change was really changing the feel and making this change from a kind of brooding, sadder, slower song to a more upbeat, almost reggae feeling. It's really just, I just like to give a shout out to the whole, to the Bay Area musical community. I feel really blessed to be meeting all these people, and especially now I lived in the city for 17 years and now I live in Berkeley, and I can't seem to leave my house without running into a musician. That we come to each other's shows, we help each other promote. It's, there's a weekly meeting at a recording studio in Berkeley every Friday to just sort of be there for each other and support each other. I just feel very lucky to be a part of that and to thank all of the people that I'm getting to play with. It feels great.
That was John Givens from eight-piece soul band No Lovely Thing. The piece was produced by Chris Hoff. For more about No Lovely Thing, go to KALW.org and click on Cross Currents. That's also where you can go to listen to more Bay Area beats and subscribe to the Cross Currents podcast. You can even search our shows by subject. Find out how at KALW.org/subscribe. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Luisa Cardoza, Lila Day, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, Stephen Short, and Eli Wirtschafter. Today's show was engineered by James Rollins. Line producer was Liza Veal. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by the Wooden Fish Ensemble of San Francisco. They'll be at the Old First Church in the city on Sunday, and the show will range from traditional Korean music to works by the classical composer Mendelssohn. Show starts at 4 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.